welcome to Game Brain, a board game podcast about our gaming group. I am your host this week, Matthew Robinson, the enthusiastic gamer, and I am joined by, do you still go by the Game Master? That feels a little...
I didn't give myself that name.
A little BDSM, maybe a little like cringe. I just want to know if you're owning it.
Look, Ben went with Game Daddy. I'm not sure if that's better, but listen...
How about a gatekeeper? Which one?
Oh, gatekeeper? Is that what you prefer?
Yeah, Game master? What would you like here?
Listen, whatever you want to call me, I'll pretty much accept it. Before we were on the air, I told you what you called me last week, and I told you why it hurt my feelings, and you said, I don't care.
I can't believe we were all okay calling you the Game Master. how are we like, yeah, that's good for Tom's ego and also not weird.
I don't think we've said that name about me in a long
game
time.
Master.
You do what you want. Hey, how'd you get into the hobby, Matt?
How should we begin this, Master?
How'd you get into the hobby?
from the game evangelist? Is that better?
I'm kind of, yeah. I mean, to some extent we all are, and that's what this podcast is to some degree. So
sure.
I don't care. I'm not about Matt. I'm not about labels anymore.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Look, this is just Matt and Tom.
I just want to see the person.
Just two people sitting down talking about board games today.
That's all we are.
That's all. We are here this week to talk about, well, all the fun games we played recently, but specifically to focus on a new game, the new hotness that just hit in the last week or two. That I am feeling a little obsessed with. We're going to be talking about Matt Eklund's Stationfall.
The hidden traitor game that Matt likes. Interesting.
See, I mean,
it's not really hidden traitor.
It's more...
It's hidden role, for sure.
Hidden role. It's hidden role, yes. But we'll get into it. But I am super obsessed with it right now. I've had two gaming experiences in 2023 that felt like revelations to me.
Yeah?
One of them is... Vocal Runkie's Levian Campaign series, which I've owned for like 2 years and struggled to learn. And then finally the third game in the system came out. This is a GMT series of two-player war games. The third game in the system, Inferno, came out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to really learn the first one now.
Dude,
and get into the system.
I've got Fire in the Lake sitting on a shelf back there. I've got, you know, Cuba Libre. Like, they're great games. GMT makes a lot of games, and some of them are astonishingly good. But war games are harder. There's a much smaller segment of our group that is going to be into it, and it puts you through the paces. You got to work for it,
and they're typically longer than a game night, especially coin games. Which, in fact, we will talk about at some point too, because I have a new coin game that is playable in a game night. Anyway, I have become totally obsessed with the Levian campaign system. I learned Nevsky the first game. I learned Almoravid. I learned Inferno. I've been playing them a lot. I have a few. I've found a few people. I'm going to drag Tom into my cult of Levian campaign soon.
You know, I'm a GMT head. I'm right there.
I know, man. So those are the two things that I'm super into lately: Stationfall and Levian campaign. And we're going to get into them. But Tom, let's talk about game night.
Let's talk about game night.
Tell me some things you've played lately.
What have I been playing lately? Well, so that little game that you bought on a whim, Mosaic.
Yeah.
It's gotten a lot of plays lately.
Yeah. I've still only played it once. And I have to say, like, my one play of it, I liked, but like, I'm really surprised you guys have all taken to it in the way you have. And I think our listeners of our podcast are quite surprised by the amount, at least from the Discord. Everybody's like, really? You guys really like Mosaic? Like, I'm not saying it doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying off my one play, I'm still surprised that you guys all took to it.
Well, you know, for some of us, I think Trey and myself and people like that, we've been, you know, you're always searching for the great Civilization game. You know what I mean? And all you've had is heartbreakers. All you've had is close but not quite. Oh God, this could have been so good, but it's not. Oh no, it's still too long, or it's or it shaves off this thing. I mean, even the great ones with Through the Ages is a great game. There's no question that it is one of the.
That to me is the Civilization game. Yeah.
It's a pinnacle of game design, but there's no map, and when you take the map out to some extent for some Civ players, you kind of cut the heart out of it a little bit.
There's also no civilization building in Mosaic outside of the art on the cards. Like it's to me, it's very abstract. It's tag collecting. It's terraforming Mars.
The tag collecting really is a tech tree,
right? But when we break it down, it's just tag. You're just set collecting. You're just tag collecting, and you're chasing the first to get six of this tag gets 12 points. To get six of this tag.
I've alluded to the Aegean expansion, which is not an expansion at all. It is a fan made kind of rejiggering of the rules
of what
Mosaic.
Oh, there's already a house rule going on.
What I said in our review, you should go back. You should listen to some of the episodes of the podcast.
The podcast
it's really
again?
Good. It's a Game Brain. It's a podcast. Basically, this super simple concept is there's a bunch of friends and they have a gaming group and they get together periodically to talk about games. And in that, I said that this game, one of the things that Mosaic is great for is you can house rule the hell out of it and make exactly your particular flavor of civilization game. You can make it what you want it to be.
Okay.
Like for me, I kind of agree with you a little bit in that what you're saying when you say it's kind of abstract and it's kind of all about tag collection, what that says to me is that it's a little card heavy. It's like too much of the scoring is card based and not enough of it is board based, military based, city building based and all that sort of stuff. And I kind of agree with you. I think in the base setup of the game, it's like a little heavy toward the one. Well, guess what? This expansion, which is pretty well put together.
Why are you saying expand?
That's what they call it.
Because there is an expansion.
That's what they call it. It's not.
That I've actually backed.
I have too.
Yeah.
I have too. No, they call it the Aegean expansion. It's not. It's just
a different rule set. What do you say? Aegean?
Aegean.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Yeah. It's the sea around.
I just didn't.
Greece.
I thought you were saying GM or I couldn't hear you.
I gotcha. Oh, that's fine. I don't speak very clearly.
So this is a fan made expansion to the game.
It has no expansion to it whatsoever. Oh, it's so ridiculous. It's just a rule change. It's just a rule change. And I'm looking at it now. And basically the idea is that it's sort of taking the focus off of the cards and back onto the map a little bit.
Okay.
Which is pretty easy. It's just rule tweaks. Like, for instance, you know, gathering those trade goods, those different type of trade goods?
Sure, yeah.
When does that come into the game? When is that beneficial? There's like a huge section of your player map.
Yeah, it only comes in when you take the tax action or something, right?
Tariff, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just the tariff
one
action.
Thing, yeah. Or I think there are some...
There's a couple other
things that...
No.
Aren't there some cards that will play out?
There are a couple... There, if you get the card, which is... You know, wildly variable.
Sure.
Well, in this one, the end there is an in-game scoring condition for that.
Okay.
So it's kind of pushing the focus back on expand on the board, build something, build stuff out so that you get more of those tags. The area scoring during the during those empire scoring phases now has two phases. You're scoring the buildings and what you've built, and then you're scoring the military separately. So it's putting more an emphasis on that. You can't play a game in which you just ignore military, which in our game you kind of can.
Sure. I'm allergic to house rules, which I think we know. But I just immediately just go like, if I don't know why. It's not fair because it's not like the humans who are coming up with the house rules are any necessarily worse than the they are. But then, you know, maybe all the people who designed it and playtested it. But the minute house rules come into play, I don't know why. I'm just allergic to it. I instantly go... We'll just play a game that somebody designed properly.
I don't think Glenn Jover designed it improperly. Okay. I think in this case, what it more is it's more about what do you want your Civ game to focus on?
Okay.
He made a calculation, and that calculation is, for my taste, 25% more terraforming Mars than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And that with a little bit less of that and just a little bit more focus on the things that are happening on the map... I think you get a game that is closer to civilization, closer to Western empires, without sacrificing anything.
And have you guys played with these rules?
No, that's what I want to say is that I think the next play is going to be that.
Okay.
Went up and visited my son last weekend, and at the end of that weekend, I was able to play Horseless Carriage again. Mm-hmm. Still love it, just amazing.
My copy is arriving today. Ben just texted; his copy is out for delivery. It seems like it's finally hitting people who didn't win the horse's carriage lottery like you did?
Look, you know, you got to metagame harder. That's in life. That's what you got to do. Yeah. But having a fun time, like, it's been, I think people have talked about it a little bit, but playing original Wiz War and playing original cartoony Glory to Rome, which we've done several times now in the last few weeks. I don't know. We've kind of had like a little throwback period at game night where we've been kind of going back and examining some of the old classics. You and I had a great play of Brass the other week. The week Brass Birmingham became number one on Board Game Geek to celebrate it. We played a game of Brass Birmingham, and even though I prefer Lancashire, I think it's a slightly tighter experience, slightly better game. I love Brass Birmingham too. They did such a great job of creating a new board, slightly new mechanics that still delivers on all of the core experience. Just so great, so great, absolutely amazing.
We had a great game of that. That was really fun.
Loved it,
and it's really cool that that's the number one game. It doesn't really mean much, but somehow it just feels cool. Feels cool, like a heavy euro got a lot more attention than it had at number two.
You, when you go on Board Game Geek and you're new to the hobby and you go to see what the number one game is, and you see Gloomhaven, it says one thing. When you see Brass Birmingham, it says a radically different thing.
It does, and it gets a lot of blind buys because people just go like, "Well, it's got to be good."
Yeah,
and it is.
It is.
It is. Yeah. And it's worth checking out. And I like that people are just randomly buying a game that doesn't look like something they would enjoy and maybe finding something that they like in it.
And for a long, long time in the hobby, I was the standard. I was carrying the torch. I was the standard bearer for Martin Wallace. I was like, Martin Wallace is one of the greatest game designers in the world.
Right. And I was carrying the standard for John Borer. and saying that he was the true designer of all of Martin Wallace's games.
Well, he certainly agrees with you. It's unfortunately he's been banned from the Geek, so he can't post there anymore, stuff like that. But you know,
that was a callback to an old controversy in the board game hobby that most listeners might not be aware of.
Not that old. If you get the latest edition of Age of Steam.
I just got yesterday.
Somebody's name is in it and somebody's name isn't.
I just got about 20 new Age of Steam maps delivered yesterday. Ooh. I backed Expansion Pack 2 and Expansion Pack 3.
For the new design?
The new design. And it also came with a new upgraded, redesigned box insert, which is nice because the old one was just actually pretty awful.
You love your box inserts.
Well, if they design a better one and it was $20, I'm going to get it.
I'm saying aside from that.
Oh, yeah. No,
you love your box inserts.
I really love game organizing. My wife often says that I enjoy organizing the games as much as I like playing them, and it's possible I like it more. Something is calming to me about knowing that a game is ready to play. You saw how much work I put into organizing my Station Fall last night.
If I took a picture of your Station Fall box, that's what my boxes look like.
Yeah.
That's exactly what my boxes look like.
But I labeled them.
Okay, I don't put the words on the bags.
What they are without that, though.
No, it makes perfect sense for this game. I'm just saying that this is my level of organization, which is tremendously efficient, but it looks like looks like pure junk.
Bag heavy, yeah.
Yeah.
What was I just talking about?
Oh, we were talking about Age of Steam. We were talking about the new maps.
I have about 20 new maps. I'm very excited to try them. There's some really cool ones in there. There's some ones that we've played in the past that are now finally in the game and stuff like, what is that really great Canadian one that was really crazy? It'll come to me. But there's some really fun, wacky maps that are in there now. And it really just opens up all the player counts and stuff.
Right. So does it have like Disco Inferno and Moon and things like
that? Not Moon. I don't think they had the rights to any of the, I think it's Alban who's the guy who did those.
Ted Allspach?
No, the guy who did Clinic.
Alban. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think they had the rights to any of his. I could be wrong. I could just be totally talking about my buddy.
Monty's very, very good. A lot of his designs are fantastic. Exactly.
I'm really excited to check it out. I haven't even opened the box yet, but it's like weighed 100 pounds and it's like, you know, literally 20 new Age of Steam maps, which is
let's bring it
awesome.
But what I'm saying is that Martin Wallace was a very well respected game designer, but everyone's like, you know what, his games are cheap looking, they're basically built in a garage in the Midlands, and they're mean games, and we just played Struggle of Empires like a month or two ago, and despite Ben not really engaging with it, The other six players, we had a phenomenal time. It's an amazing design that never gets to the table anymore and should get to the table more. His designs are incredible. And for, I would never have, if you had said $100 that in 2023, which game designer is going to have the number one game on the Geek?
Yeah.
He wouldn't be in my top 20 choices.
No, it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. It's amazing. I love it.
When was the last new game he put out that we were excited about?
Well, Wilderness War is. I haven't played it yet, but
Wilderness War.
Yeah,
isn't that? I think that's Volker, isn't it?
Oh, am I saying the wrong?
Are you thinking,
I'm saying the wrong title? Wonderland's War.
Right. No, that's also not him.
Is that also not him?
Wilderness War is Volker. Wonderland War is like the Quacks of Quedlinburg style area control bag pulling.
Why am I Wonderland. Why am I blanking on?
I think in the snow, acre of snow, few acres of snow.
A few acres of snow is older school. I'm thinking of something that was like Peter Pan related, I think.
Yeah, he did have like a almost like a mini game that came out recently. It was like people fight, like wizards fighting and stuff. Yeah, I'll tell you. Hold on.
I'm looking it up right now because we have power.
This is great.
This is the
Bloodstones. Is that what you're thinking of? Wildlands.
Yes, Wildlands. That's what it is. Wildlands.
Yes, that is his like a little whiz war-y, actually, potentially.
Yeah, and you know, in 2021 he had a re-release of the Tinder's Trail. Oh, Anno.
Right.
Anno 8-100.
I love that game.
Such a good game.
My God. How did we forget about that? Yeah.
It's insanely good.
Yeah, these are the new Age of Steam maps that I got. So we got Italy, Portugal, Great Britain, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, 1890 Berlin, Scotland, Seattle Metro. That's the one I was trying to think of. Not sure.
Oh, yeah.
France, Poland, Hungary, Finland, New England, Switzerland, Pittsburgh, Heavy Cardboard, Detroit Bankruptcy.
There's
I've played Detroit Bankruptcy online before. That one is fun.
There's some great stuff in there. It's such a great game system, and each little rule tweak can make for a really different game.
Actually, here we go. Sweden Recycling, Pacific Electric, Disco Inferno, Southern China, okay. Osako, and Lincoln Funeral Car.
Disco Inferno is a lot of fun. That's a really good one. I mean,
that's so many new maps we got. Yeah, that's awesome.
But the question is Korea anywhere in there? The best map.
Yeah, I wonder if it maybe was implemented in a new name.
Hmm.
We'll see. Hmm. Yeah, Korea's crazy.
Korea is the best. I think that it basically is one rule that literally makes it's an so entirely mean. Different game.
Yeah, no, that one hurts my brain. that one's a brain burner.
It does. So, Martin Wallace, Anno 1800. How did we forget that? I know why I forgot that, because I can't look at my box for Anno 1800. I took it on a trip.
Oh, no.
Rained. Bags, plane delayed, bags left out in the rain for an hour.
That sucks.
And the game is still intact.
The box.
But the box is crumbling away. I look at it and I see pieces of cardboard falling off of it. It's
Yeah, that's rough.
It's a hate crime.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
No,
it's not okay. I'm not going to say what airline it is, but, you know, if you guys ever
stay
decided...
Stay away from Spirit Air, guys.
If you... No, actually, it's Southwest, which I actually really like as an airline. I'm a big supporter of them, but they did me wrong in that one time. What have you been playing lately?
Yeah, so I've been playing. Let's get into Levy and Campaign. So Levy and Campaign is a system by Volko Runka, who's most famous for Wilderness War and the coin games, the first round of coin games, Cuba Libre and Distant Plain and Fire in the Lake. And this is a whole new system that he created. The first one was a game called Nevsky, which came out about 5 years ago. And 2019, so I guess 4 years ago. Two-player only. And this is a system, much like in the way that Coin is a system, or much like in the way that 18XX is a system, or Age of Steam is a system. And
is Nevsky about Saul Nevsky in West Hollywood?
Yeah, exactly. No, okay. It is about the Teutons and Rus in collision 1240 to 1242. So,
the Teutons.
What did I say?
Teutons. Like Tutankhamun and his buddies.
Okay. The Germans versus the Russians.
Basically. It's all the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Fighting in 1240 to 1242, a very specific time, but all of these games take place in medieval warfare. That is the whole point of this. And what makes medieval warfare interesting is that nobody had an army. There were no standing armies. That was not a thing. Countries,
you had
nations,
to put together little coalitions of get this these people over here and get them on your side, and so on.
You had to find a rich person and pay them to hire a levy of self-trained soldiers in order to come out and fight for you. But
hey, Matt, what if somebody makes a better deal for those guys? Could they possibly fight on the other side?
There are actually Inferno is the only one that has betrayals happening and okay. side switching. But
because historically at that time that was fairly common,
right? And I think in some other games coming down the line, there's going to be a little more of that. But these were basically. The interesting part about it is that you have to, it's very Euro-y, which is what drew me into it, in the sense that there is the management of hiring and paying and supplying and feeding various armies on your board.
I love a war game that gets into logistics in a meaningful way.
Well, it's called Levy and Campaign, which means half logistics, half fighting. And literally every year of the game, or every, they're broken into 30-day phases, 30-day months, are half levy, half campaign. That's why it's called levy and campaign. You literally do the levy step, then you do the campaign step. And in the levy step, you are hiring lords who are rich guys, powerful guys. And it was all guys. I'm not just being sexist for no reason. You must hire them, and then you can ask them to levy their forces for you. But what's interesting about it is they're not there to fight for your cause. They're there for the almighty dollar. They only care about money. And when you hire them,
the Wagner Group,
you hire them for a period of time. And at the end of that period of time, they leave. So you can pay them for 3 months of service. And in that time, you promise to feed them, which you have to figure out how to do.
Sure.
And you promise to take care of them.
Sure.
If you don't feed them, they will work less and they will disappear faster. And you literally, every game has a calendar on it. And you are seeing how long you own, not own, but have hired these people. They're basically mercenaries. They don't care about your cause. They care about the money. They care about the loot they're going to get in payment or the coin you're going to pay them with. And at the end of their service, they are going to leave you. And a big part of the game is how far can you take them into the other lands to do the jobs you need them to do, and then
before they're gone,
before they take off. Exactly. And bad things happen if they take off angry at you, because they'll never come back.
Right. And they're not rehirable.
They will permanently disband and disappear if you abandon them behind enemy lines with no food, and their service marker will literally disappear off the board. Otherwise, if you treat them well and appreciate their service, they will come back to you after they will say, you know, we're going to go rest for a couple months, but you know, in late April, we're willing to potentially be paid again if you would like to do that.
More than half of the Crusades, the Crusaders would never go for another Crusade.
Right. Well, there you go. These guys are for the most part down as long as you treat them well. So that is a really fun logistics game of planning your strategies, planning your maps, and really looking at these lords as resources. And my favorite part of the game is having these handful of lords and really figuring out what they can accomplish, looking at them as resources. One of my favorite video games of all time is a game called Darkest Dungeon, which I actually might say it is my favorite video game of all time. I've played hundreds of hours of Darkest Dungeon. What I love about Darkest Dungeon is you have a squad of like 30 people, and they're gonna die. They're not gonna live very long.
They're going into the Darkest Dungeon.
You're sending them into the dungeon in order to do things. But sure. you look at them as resources, and you look at them as how much am I going to invest in these people in order to get back certain things? How much loot am I going to get from them? Right. How many things are they going to slay that's going to bring back trinkets that I need that are going to help my squad come better? It becomes a sense of...
That's how you treat friends and family in real life.
Sort of. But you are really looking at them as these resources that you are willing to spend, and sometimes spend to the point that they are gone in order to achieve certain ends. And it may sound strange, but Levy and Campaign is the closest I've found, although there is a Darkest Dungeon board game, the closest I've found to a Darkest Dungeon board game, in that it really feels like you can invest in these people, like in your lords. You can train them to learn archery. You can train them to do all these things. You can give them these superpowers. You can build them up. But then you really, if you're going to put all that time and money and effort into training up these awesome lords, you better get some good stuff out of it.
You better put a ring on it.
Yeah, you better
lock it down.
You better conquer Novgorod. You better get down into Russia and do something real with it and get some loot and ravage some territory and get some victory points, or else you have wasted it. And sometimes there's lords you're like, I'm not training you anything. You're going in there, you're ravaging three places and you're dead. Yeah. That's your job right now, buddy.
You're going to soak up some cannon fire for us.
Yeah.
We're going to really appreciate that.
100%. You're going to go in there and just distract this other lord, so this guy who I actually care about is going to go do some amazing stuff. That to me is so fun.
That sounds awesome.
It's a two-player game only, although it's very easy to play multi-handed just to get the system down. I wouldn't say it's very fun to play it alone, although a lot of people get enjoyment out of it. but what blew this game out of the water for me is that it plays online, and it plays perfectly online at this incredible website that I had never heard about before called Rally the Troops. So rally-the-troops.com is a site made by one human being. His name is Tor, and it is a war game online system. Right now they have 11 games on there, including Pax Premier Second Edition, Nevsky, Wilderness War, Rommel in the Desert, 300 Crusader Rex, Hammer of the Scots.
Danke, Tor. Danke.
It is so well done. It is free. I've actually reached out and asked him if I can send him money because I like it so much. And he's like, no, it's good. I just do it for fun. It's so great. It's such a, it feels as good as BGA in terms of just like the implementation of it. And you can play
Hammer of the Scots.
They got Hammer of Scots in there.
I didn't hear that.
And he's going to keep adding more and more games on there. I don't know if they're going to get other Levian campaign games, but like it plays so well. I have like 9 games going at all times.
Cause Hammer of the Scots is a block game.
Yeah,
so
I own it.
So it has, so the game, the system allows hidden features.
100%.
Oh,
But Rally of the Troops is fantastic. It's a really great way to play Nevsky. It's a really great way to learn Nevsky. It's a great way to learn the system. Almoravid is the second game in the system. It's longer. It's more complex. It's got an incredible political system that I won't even bother to explain, but it's beautiful. And then I'm going to go ahead and say, I think Nevsky is still probably the best way to get into the system, especially because you can play it on rallythetroopsforfree.com.
And it's the simplest system of the
three. It is, potentially. Inferno is maybe 5% more complicated. I'd say Almoravid is 15% more complicated.
Okay.
Almoravid is definitely... it's not the best way to learn the system because it kind of flips a whole thing on its head.
Right.
And it really does this cool thing where one side, the Muslims, get to decide the battlefield.
Right.
And they basically, you literally get to create where the wars are and then sort of use that to lure your enemies in. It just adds this whole other element, which is, it might honestly be the best one. It is incredible. The design is beautiful, but it adds such a big MacGuffin on top of a complicated system.
Right. Well, that's why that Spanish campaign was so fluid and so contested for so long.
Right.
It's amazing.
And why? And it's great that it's the second one, because what it did was it goes, all right, you got the system. Let me blow your mind and show you what we can do with the system.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Korean map for.
Yeah, kind of. Right. And then the third one is just balls out fun. It is Inferno. It takes place in Tuscany. And it has this incredible treachery mechanism that is so fun, and that it gets almost, I'm gonna say it gets a little Ameritrashy, which is not unusual for a war game.
War games.
But it has a chaos element to it that some might find a little unpredictable, but that is so thematic and great. So basically, this is the first game where the two sides are not necessarily different nations or different religions, right? Nevsky is two different nations. Almoravid is two different religions. Mm-hmm. This one is just a couple of Tuscans who are basically waiting to see where the winds of change are going to blow them. And if you conquer a lord and they're allegiant to the other side, they might hear whispers that the conquering is happening and go, oh, we're down to switch sides. Like we just want to be on the winning side. And so the more places that get conquered, the more that can spread, and that places can start to start flipping and right. literally be conquered just by hearing another place got conquered and just go, well, you can have us. We're good. Well, we want, you guys seem like you're going to win the war. So we're just going to raise your flag right now.
Italy never changes. Like it never, like from the Roman times, that was the way it was, yeah. right? It was, Rome was this tiny little part and everything else was a province, and they were all up for bid at any time.
Yeah,
like all the way to the Second World War. It's like, should we go the other way? I think of which way the wind is blowing. It's amazing.
Yeah, and like what's really cool is all three of these games take place in historical periods that I mean outside of El Cid and Almoravid, who I'd heard of, I've seen the movie. I knew nothing about any of these periods. I knew nothing about Nevsky. I've heard of Alexander Nevsky, but I didn't really know anything about it. I had heard about. I'd heard the words Guelphs and Ghibellines before, but I had no idea that they existed in Tuscany or what they were, that one was a papal state and that one was, you know, basically working for the German Empire. But it's been so fun to learn about these periods of time. I knew nothing. You know, this isn't just World War II or World War I trenches or Vietnam or...
I mean, Italy is just fascinating. The idea that it's basically not a country, it's just a series of states, and it was for so long. And even during the Roman Empire, it was essentially a bunch of states that were just held together by something, kind of like Germany, right? Germany was the German city states and stuff like that, but their evolution was so different. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing.
So I'm just obsessed with the system. I'm amazed by Volker Runke and his ability to sort of create these systems. Now I really enjoy coin, and I'm going to talk for a second about a new coin, but I find that learning a new coin is like learning an entirely new game every time. I find that because there are four asymmetric factions, and yes, some of the actions carry over, but I feel like to me it's as much of a rules load as learning a new game anytime I learn a new coin.
To some degree, because the historical chrome that makes the four factions do what they do is always fairly significantly different.
Right. Yeah, yeah. What I love about Levy and Campaign is I feel like now that I know the system...
You only have to learn the 20% different.
Yeah. 10 minutes, I'm in on the new one.
Wow. That's great.
Which feels like 18XX to me, which is something I love about 18XX. It's like, okay, what's different? Oh, that's cool. And just seeing all, and so he's bringing in all these different designers. And I'm on the Discord where I can see the next 20 coming down the line over the next two decades or whatever that they're in development on. And people are doing such cool, fun things with it. And it really does feel like 18XX. It's two player only. Although there is a four player version that is coming. It is the seventh right now, and the third just came out. Maybe probably 4 or 5 years away, but there is a multiplayer version coming, which everybody's very interested in, of course. I give a high recommendation if you like very heavy. I'm talking 3.5 to 4.0 weight games with two players that can take anywhere from 90 minutes to 6 hours, depending on the scenario that you choose. The full campaign will usually take about four to six hours. It's a day.
The two players is the hard part for me, right?
Yeah, that's of course.
The like we had 12 people at game night last night. Yep. Not uncommon. So finding the time for two players, but I'm dying to try this.
Yeah, we'll just let's pick a night you come over, you and I, we just sit down.
Done.
Cup of tea, pull up Nevsky. It's just a good time. And the nice thing is you really can, there's so many really well-designed scenarios in all of them that have different varying lengths, and you can have a really enjoyable thing that will teach you a new part of the game. Like, okay, let's jump right into late war and let's see, you know, what the end of the campaign looked like when all the lords were fully equipped and ready to go. And it only lasts for 60 days. And let's see how that works.
Amazing. Amazing.
Really, that's Levy and Campaign. The question you might be asking at the end of this is, where would I jump in? My answer is Nevsky. Almost purely because it's on Rally of Troops and you can try it out for free.
Yeah, that's amazing. I can't believe Rally of Troops is free.
He should at least have a little like tip me button in the corner, a little tip jar.
Yeah,
let me throw you a couple cups of coffee or something for the enjoyment you've brought me.
Patreon, people would go nuts for it.
I mean, I literally emailed him and was just like, "Do you have like anything I can support you with?" And he's like, "No, it's just for fun."
Does he live in one of those countries where they support them?
Yeah, it's probably somewhere in Scandinavia, and he probably has a wonderful life and healthcare and, you know, a house that you can afford with a normal job. Ugh,
we hate those people. They're the worst. The
privilege.
They're the worst. They don't have to put out a tip jar?
Unbelievable.
Okay, what kind of country do you not have to put out a tip jar?
What kind of country do you have to not set up a GoFundMe if you stub your toe?
What kind of country do you need to beg for basic medical care?
Unbelievable.
That is ridiculous. Oh man. Well, good stuff.
Should we just jump into the game?
We're 34 minutes in. I think we're gonna have a lot to talk about in terms of this. So we can add something on to the end if we're not giving people their due.
They're not money's worth.
I will say I do want to say one other thing, which is I bought from Candace Shea.
What is Shia? Oh, XIA. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
I believe it.
I've always heard great things about the game. I've always wanted to try it.
So first of all, it's Legends of the Drift system plus the expansion Shards of the Empire.
Legends of the Drift, that's a Fast and Furious franchise, right?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Okay, yeah. So Dom and the fam are all together again, only this time. In the last one they went to space?
Yeah.
They just stay there.
Oh, wow.
They just stay there. Dom...
100% that's a franchise coming, yeah. Like somewhere in the mid-2030s.
Dom's got a modified GTO that is outside of the rings of Jupiter.
And that Tesla that Elon sent up into space is up there, and they've got a race.
No, that's Charlize Theron. She's out there. That's the bad guys. That's the way it goes. it's a game that I want to get to the table, but it's got to be the right people because it is going
just say,
to
just say who shouldn't be at the table.
You know who shouldn't be at the table. You know who should be. Look, it is an old school throwback kind of game. It is Ameritrash. It is roll some dice and Ooh. Everything you've been planning for all this time is just gone.
Right.
I will say that the original Shia game is very unbalanced and kind of doesn't quite work. The expansion is mandatory it. So having that expansion in there is great.
I have no problem with a mandatory expansion.
Well, you don't?
I really don't.
Oh, that's good.
I actually like a mandatory expansion.
Well, if it came with the original game, I would. I mean, listen, if I bought the original game, I'd be upset that I have to play an expansion to fix it. But
yeah, but it means they figured it out. It means that it was worth publishing that they felt it was that much better.
It looks gorgeous. It's really fun. You talk about sandboxy when we're talking about Station Fall, which we're going to talk about in a minute. It is super, super sandboxy. You can kind of do anything. You can play any type of style of game that you want to. And it is something that I am committed to getting to the table in the next 2 months.
Well, throw me in that group.
Definitely. Definitely going to throw you in that group for sure. But speaking of sandboxy, space themed madness.
Yeah.
Ameritrash kind of still Ameritrash, right? I would say Station Fall is very Ameritrashy.
It's the most Euro-y version of this type of game I've ever played, but yes. It would still be Station. So this is Station Fall. It's a 2023 release. Designer is Matt Eklund. The artists are Madeline Fijal, Anne Isaacson, and Josefson Strand, and it comes from Ion Game Design. Station Fall is a hidden roll game with
ish
action selection
ish
and a indeterminate number of rounds that can last, that can play anywhere from one to nine players, which is wild, and take anywhere from, I'd say, 90 minutes to 3 hours.
Yeah, I think that if I had to guess at the time length, I would say almost the exact same thing. We got it in 2.5 hours, I think.
It's got a teach.
With five players, yeah.
It's got a real teach. I'm going to open it up by just reading the beginning of the launch manual here, which I think does a fantastic job of setting the tone of the game.
Please.
If you don't mind, everybody gather around. Where are you? Something's wrong. The station crew are hustling here and there, but no one is answering my questions. Does this have anything to do with that weird noise earlier? Or that weird calm I got last night? Is that robot looking at me funny? Hey, that guy's wearing a helmet. Do I need a helmet? Mm-hmm. A glance out the window confirms that the whole station is tumbling. That's odd, but is it dangerous? If there was danger, there'd be an alarm or something, right? And has the Earth always looked that big? Who are you? Imagine a dozen or so random humans, robots, and none of the aboves, each with their own abilities, agenda, and secret relationships, running wild on a space station because it is going to be incinerated in less than 15 minutes. You are one of them, and you have collaborators forming a conspiracy together, ready to assist you in achieving your agenda. And your conspirators may be allied with others on the station without your knowledge, which may be problematic for you. There's also definitely probably some sort of monstrous secret weapon project locked up on board, which may be problematic for everyone. Good luck.
There you go.
That's Station Fall.
We are on a space station that is crashing to Earth. In 15 minutes, it's going to hit that atmosphere. It's going to burn up, and the game will fade out, and the game will be over, and everybody involved is up to shenanigans.
Are there good guys and bad guys in this game, Tom?
Yeah, kind of.
But does the good team win or the bad team win?
No.
How many people win at the end of this game?
Well, in the base version of the game, there's going to be one winner. It's going to be the person that best met the objectives of their main character, of their player character.
Right. If you're playing with more than six, there can potentially be multiple winners. But this is not a game. This is not a semi-cooperative game where we could all lose.
No.
This is not a game where the good guys win or the bad guys win. This is not a game where traitors are revealed. This is a game where you are playing competitively and you are trying with all your muster to win the game for yourself.
We had five players last night, and there were 14 characters that were laid out on the mat next to the board. And of those characters, we then got two cards, and the cards were two of those characters, and we could choose which one we wanted to be our player character.
Right.
And which one we wanted to be like a little bonus points if blank happens to that person, right? So which character we were was highly hidden at the beginning anyway.
Right.
One of the things I like about the game is that the extent to which keeping yourself hidden is a factor is highly variable. I think there are some characters that you can keep hidden for quite a while, and that might make a lot of sense because once I know who you are, I can mess with you more effectively.
I'd go as far as to say that this is a hidden role game where the minute everyone knows who you are, it's rather easy, I think, for them to foil you and to make sure you don't win.
Did I know who you, when did I know who you were?
Very early. But I was also I agreed with what you were saying more at the beginning of the game, where I was like, I think I'm playing the kind of character who it doesn't really matter if people know who I am.
I agree.
And I was wrong.
No, I don't think you were wrong.
I feel like I was pretty easy to foil. Although I foiled myself more than I didn't really give you guys a chance to foil me because I foiled myself. Let's take a step back. Let's talk about the basics here.
Sure.
You got into it a little bit, but let's expand a little bit more. So you have a character that is you. Yeah. Okay. Out of the 14, there are 27 characters in the game. Each character is like a role in Avalon or Resistance or something, or I guess Resistance has other roles, or even almost like a character in Blood on the Clock Tower.
Yeah.
It is a character that comes with its own rules, comes with its own objectives, often comes with its own additions to the map that change the game state permanently.
Sometimes they start with equipped with things.
Right.
They have special abilities. They have a extra special ability that if you reveal who you are, you unlock that ability. And some of those abilities are quite game changing.
So you pick a random mix of people. You literally randomly deal them out depending on the player count. At five players, is 14. And
you can play up to nine players in this game, which would be 22 cards out there.
I think it's 20. It's 22. You're right. But it's a lot. And knowing what all the characters do is a big part of the game, which is why I probably wouldn't recommend that you play with nine right off the bat, because that's a lot of characters. But basically, the characters are going to change the state of the game and make the game very different. Very similar to the way of Blood on the Clock Tower, which the mix of the villagers or whatever that you have in the game is going to really decide the tone of the game.
Except that, unlike Blood on the Clock Tower, we know which characters are in the game.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. We know mostly, but we don't know exactly who's who. Right. So in this game, we know everybody that's in the station, right? We are locked in a station, literally a space station above Earth that is falling into Earth, hence station fall. It's crashing. And we have 15 minutes-ish. Each minute is a round of the game. Depending on player count, there's different minutes. We have that much time in order to achieve our objectives and get off the station.
And the variety of objectives is fantastic because you would think, hey, get to the escape pod and get out of here is the objective. No. I would say that two-thirds of the characters, they want to escape. That's one of the things. Is that the main goal for them? I would say for one-third of the characters, that's the main source of points is getting off of there. Maybe even less than that.
Yeah.
Because they all have things they want to do.
Right.
Going from the simplest, which is Astrochimp. Astrochimp is a sentient chimpanzee that works on the station. Mm-hmm. And what Astro Chimp wants is his goal. There's always a little pithy phrase for it, and his goal is shiny things.
Shiny things.
Shiny things.
He wants a gun.
He wants to get a gun. He wants to get a briefcase. He wants to get a shard of ancient artifact.
Yeah.
And he wants to take all those things and he wants to get to Earth.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
The chimp just wants some shiny stuff and to get the fuck off the station.
That's all he wants to do. And right. he has some special powers. Like, for instance, he is a tunnel rat, which means he can use the secret ducts and vents system to get from A to B in a faster, more efficient way than everybody else can.
Then there's the station chief, the actual chief of a station fall, who wants nothing more than to die going down on the ship while everyone else got off safely.
He gets points for not making it off. She. I'm so sorry.
Yep.
They get points for getting other people off the ship.
But must die on the ship.
Must die on the
going
ship.
Going down. It must be like in the bridge, dying as the captain, going down with the ship. But only really is going to get a lot of points if a lot of people got off.
So the great thing to do with Station Chief is knock them out and drag them into an escape pod. into an escape pod.
No! Right. So everybody's got these really fun objectives, and you know all of the objectives that are in the game because you can see all the characters, and on the characters it's printed their objectives, but you don't know who is who. Now, why does that matter? Because if I know that you need to go down with the ship and that's going to get you more points than what I need to make sure you don't go down with the ship.
Or that the points that you're getting from other people getting off the ship, that doesn't happen.
Right. Only one person can win. This is the important thing. It's not like we all just get to achieve our goals and then high five at the end. No, only one person is going to win. And if you see somebody else, if you know exactly what somebody else needs to do and you can see exactly how many points they have, there's nothing hidden. I would know exactly how many points you have if I know who you are.
Right.
And I can know exactly how many points I have by knowing who I am. And if I'm losing, I have to hurt you.
There's a character in our game today called the Daredevil. Yep. And the Daredevil, they get 3 points just for making it to back to Earth.
Right.
They get another 2 points if they're the only one who made it back to Earth.
And they and they add an item to the game. So a lot of these characters come with their own MacGuffins, their own rules. And
sometimes it's a location. Sometimes it's an
item. And the Daredevil has a jetpack that anybody can use.
Actually, doesn't start with the jetpack.
No, it doesn't start with it. It's somewhere on the board. Anybody can use it. As long as you are in space with a helmet and the jetpack, you can just go to Earth. And just say, I made it safely. And that's the easiest way to get to Earth. Anybody could do it. All you need is a helmet and to be in space and to have the jetpack and get out. So everybody wants that. There's nobody who does. Most people who want to go to Earth would rather use that jetpack. It's the easiest way out.
Sure.
Everything else is quite difficult to figure out how to get to Earth.
So if I'm my secret role is the Daredevil, I want to do a couple things. First of all, I want to get that jetpack and I want to get a helmet because I don't start with a helmet either. I want to get those two things for sure.
Right.
And then I want to sabotage as many of the escape pods as possible in the hopes that nobody else makes it off.
But you're going to need a weapon to do that.
You'll need a weapon to do that. And you can get a wrench, which is a bludgeon, or you can get a gun. Guns are very rare, very hard to get. Not a lot of guns in space.
No. They're very difficult to come by.
But you gotta try and find one, or you can make one, because there are different rooms that do different things. But let's talk about the basics of the game. So if, at the beginning of the game, none of us have flipped over who we are, what do we do? How do we make this work? Because there are these 14 characters in our game last night.
Yeah.
How do we do that? Well, what you do is you have influence points. You have these little cubes right in front of you.
Yeah.
And by putting an influence cube onto a character.
Onto it, like there's the picture of 14 character cards along the side of the board, almost like worker placement spots.
Correct. When I put a cube on there, that means I'm whispering in their ear, I'm cajoling them, I'm maybe blackmailing them, I'm maybe forcing them to do what I want them to do.
The game calls them your conspirators.
Your conspirators, exactly right. So I'm going to do that, and then I have my action token, and I can put that on. Now, if that person already has cubes on them, well, guess what? I have to put influence cubes matching the amount of the previous people.
In order to be able to control that character, you must have as many or the most influence cubes, and you must have at least one influence cube.
So I really want that Daredevil to do something for me.
Right.
Somebody put 2 cubes on the Daredevil. I'm going to put 2 cubes on the Daredevil so that I can activate them, and then I'm going to put my A down there. If I'm the only person that has an A on there, I'm going to be able to take 2 actions with that character. If somebody's A is already there, he's a little exhausted, so he's only going to be able to do 1 thing for me. Right. And what can he do? He can move. And moving is simply going from this space on the spaceship, on the space station, to an adjacent space on the space station. One of the great things about the game is that the space station is quite large and movement is very, very slow.
Yeah.
So to really achieve your goals, you need to use a wide range of these 14 characters to do little pieces of the things that they have to do for you.
Yeah.
You get a free pickup action where you can pick an item up. If you want to pick another item up, guess what? That's an action right there.
Yep.
To throw an item into the next compartment is an action. Like every little thing is an action. And in addition, you have your own special action for your character oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And there's special actions for the room that you're in. So I'm in the Maker Lab or whatever the heck that is called. The
3D printing room.
The 3D printing
room. You can 3D print a helmet for yourself. That's an action.
Can I print a gun? Oh, if I'm an officer,
only
I can
officers
print a gun.
Can print guns. You have to have the special clearance in order to print a 3D printed gun.
Correct. In our game of the 14 characters, three were officers.
Right.
And the officers can do things like 3D print. They can go into locked rooms.
And remember, nobody until they reveal is the officer. So anyone can control the officer as long as you have the influence cubes necessary and an action point on there. So you are all 14. Everyone is all 14 characters potentially until they reveal.
My character last night was not an officer, but my character desperately wanted there to be a lot of mayhem.
Yeah,
so I
had a security bot.
So I had to get an officer to go into the bridge to do the things that only officers can do in the bridge. Right. In this case, it was unlock. Project X. I do now. Be honest. Did I ruin the game in any way?
You showed the potential of what could happen if you unlock Project X. So outside of the 14 characters that are randomly chosen in the beginning of the game, there are 8 Project X cards. Now this is picture the Xenomorph from Alien, picture a virus outbreak from the movie Outbreak, picture all the villains of every possible sci-fi movie you can imagine. And
Weyland Yutani is leasing a small space on the space station,
right,
and they're doing dark science.
Right. There are horrible things happening in one part of the station. And one of the things you can do is find out what's in there and release it. Just open the door and let it out. And you don't know what it exactly is in there.
Did I find out what was in before I released it?
What was in there, Tom?
I did not find
you
out.
You did
what.
Not
no,
find out.
No, one of the players found out what was in there.
You
laughing so hard at the card that I said, I must release that.
I must know. And you released a tentacled monstrosity, which then went through the entire station eating people.
Yep.
And they weren't dead. They were just in its stomach and couldn't act or do anything until somebody manufactured a bomb and blew it up and everybody fell out of their stomach.
Dead. Well, I mean, okay, so dead is a weird word in the game because what there is there's a state called down.
Right.
Down is kind of the equivalent of dead, except that you could be revived.
Right.
And when a human gets sucked up by this beast, it's down.
Right. So, by the way, it's in its stomach, so it can't be revived.
Correct.
But if you were to figure out how to kill the monster, everybody would fall out of its stomach and then still be down.
Did any of us figure out how to kill a monster?
Yeah.
I think two people single-handedly.
You and I were the only ones who were like, okay, let's just do this. Let's build a bomb. Let's throw the bomb. Let's kill the thing. And then everybody will be in a room filled with fire now.
I mean, and really, we didn't do that until it had eaten
90%?
9?
Yeah.
No, I think it was more than that. I think it was like 10.
There was only 4 characters that you could use on the board.
Because the monster had eaten everybody else.
Everybody, yeah.
And it was mass pandemonium.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, and that totally changed the game. If that had been, there's another thing in there that's just a death ray. And I'm not going to spoil anymore because it is fun to learn them. But the death ray is it adds a action to one of the rooms wherein you can shoot and blow up an escape pod as it's leaving the station. That's the only way in the game to destroy escape pods. And the amount of work it takes to get on an escape pod and go to Earth is so huge that once you see the death ray revealed, you're now thinking, I'm not getting on a death. So how else am I getting points?
Because
I'm not going.
Everybody is killing each other over the jetpack now because it's the only safe way out.
So every one of these Project X's can massively change the game, and they don't have to come out. Everybody can decide Project X stays in there. And I'm sure there are games where nobody finds out and it just stays in there.
The the clock is the 15 rounds, the 15 action rounds that you're going to take over the course of the game. And there's a little fun coda at the end, which is when it gets down to one, the game should end. But there's a 33% chance that you'll get one extra turn,
right.
which is a fun little bit of...
Which could be wonderful if you need that extra turn, or horrible because it could also give somebody an extra turn to thwart your plan.
Which is to say... If you're looking for a deeply strategic game, this both is that and isn't that.
Yeah.
It is.
It's the most strategic of these types that I've played, but it is still way on the side of Chaos Ball.
It is a 14, for our five-player game, it was a 14-character puzzle in which I have 15 actions in which I need to do 40 things.
Right.
And if I use these all these different characters correctly, I think I can do it. And that's essentially the essence right. of the way the game is. But because of things like, oh, somebody released a giant chaos monster that just ate not only my primary, but my secondary character.
Right.
You know, oh, there's so much chaos that goes into the game that you you must walk into it with a healthy understanding that, oh, this is fun. This is an experience.
Yeah.
Try your best, but realize that the station is falling and go with it.
Yeah. Right? And you know, there are other games in this ilk that I've enjoyed. Let's name a few of them. Wiz War comes to mind immediately.
Original Wiz War is the thing we brought up the most because it right. very much is that way, and that it's take that-y. It's your abilities to thwart other people. Yeah. You're thwarting other people as you're trying to accomplish your own goals. You're playing against people as much as you're playing for your own conditions. And it's funny. It's funny.
And it creates a great story. Like I mean, just the story we created all together last night was really fun, but didn't just feel like a story. I really felt like I was playing a game the whole time. Not just, so some of these games can often just be like, okay, great. We told a cool story, but I wasn't like fully connected to the mechanics or the actual gameplay. I feel like I'm fully invested in the game itself and the story we're creating, which I feel is quite a hard thing to do in a game.
Thematically, it's closest to a Tom Wham game from 1979, the same year Dune came out, called The Awful Green Things from Outer Space.
Oh, right, right. Yes, you were talking about that last.
Yeah, it's a two-player only game in which there is a crew player, and there is the awful, evil, rapidly multiplying evil green men from outer space. And you're fighting over this space station or spaceship in order to try and survive and outwit the other player.
Yeah. It also reminds me a lot of Cosmic Encounter, like a much better version of Cosmic Encounter in the sense of the characters that are in the game decide the game. That is what changes the entire game. And the random collection that you have, you know, the Sniveler is interesting in any game, but really becomes interesting if there is the opposite character in that game, or if there's one who totally doesn't care. But, you know, it's the strange, like the most fun point of the game is dealing the cards at the beginning. And in an experienced group where we all know them, everybody looks at them and goes, this is going to be a crazy one, like just by the combination.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. I think it's a fairly slight connection to that game, but it definitely is one of those things where, oh, look, there are three characters that are playing the secrets game in this one.
Right, right.
Secrets are going to be very heavy.
Right.
And this one is, oh, look, there are like three characters that are, what are they, renegades or what?
Fugitives. Yeah.
Three fugitives in the game. Oh, this is going to be a bad versus good right. sort of situation going on.
There's so much, like, this is a...
Battlestar Galactica is the one that I would bring up because you're moving around a large space. You're taking actions that your character can do, or you're taking actions that the space can do.
And there's people who are trying to thwart your plans.
And it is semi co-op.
Yeah.
This game is semi co-op. You are essentially trying to win on your own, but to some degree the people that are trying to survive are kind of working for your character. For instance, in this game wanted very much for some characters to get off the get off the ship, which could be helping their conditions as well.
I needed to collect compromat on people, which is literally information about them they don't want you to have, which forces them to do things they don't want you to do, and I was collecting it, but I needed all the people I had compromat on to escape.
Yeah, I played the security robot, and the security robot's job, this spider looking security robot's job, was to down as many fugitives as or suspects as I could find. Then secondarily, down anyone with a bludgeon or with a gun.
Yep.
And then third, make sure that the secret containing briefcase and the alien artifact shard did not make it to Earth.
Right. Right. Which is very fun if there's somebody who their exact thing is like the chimp who needs to get those things to
Earth. Needs the shiny things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Reminds me a bit of Dead of Winter in the sense that we are as well moving around a thing. There's obstacles. There's bad things that are coming out. We're trying to solve them. Everybody has their own little thing, but also everybody's things are kind of potentially opposites of each other. And it reminds me a lot of a game called Nemesis, which is basically the exact same theme outside of, it is not a
but that's space much station. More of an Ameritrash shooter type thing.
Yeah. But it feels very similar in the sense that it is an amusement park, the board. Yep. You know, there are different things you can do, different things you can experiment with. There's different things you can sort of unlock. And so, you know, in this game, there are, you know, in Stationfall, there's, like I described at the beginning, it is almost like a map of an amusement park, and over here is the Project X, and you could totally let that out and see what happens. Right. And over here there's the antimatter containment, and if you let antimatter out, it starts a self-destruct system on the ship. And over here is outside of space, and you could totally go outside of space. You need a helmet, and you can fly around, you can travel really quickly through other parts of the space station. And then there's a whole thing with cameras. You could turn the cameras off, and if you do violence against people, then you don't get suspicious. You can actually lose the game if at the end of the game you are convicted and guilty, and somebody has sent evidence to the news back home. There's all these crazy little rules which aren't worth teaching at the beginning of the game. It's just like, tell me what you want to do, I'll tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
And then I'll explain things as they come up.
Which is to say, it's a tough teach, but realize that Nemesis is much more like Mansions of Madness or like some heavy kind of experience, where Stationfall is almost a party game.
Yeah, totally.
It really is. It's even though the things that keep it from being a party game is that actually you can do a lot of planning and there's a lot of strategy that you can pour into this game.
Yeah.
And it is not an easy teach. You did a great job teaching.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, this is a beast.
But it is a beast of a teach, which is the antithesis of what party games are.
Right. Now, here's the thing about it, though. I will say everyone at the table grokked it pretty quick and grokked it fully, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's one of those things that there's a lot to get through, but after that, it's all really intuitive. Everything pretty much works how you expect it to work. There are very few things in the game where I'm like, okay, that's a weird little thing that I've got to remember.
And we played with Jake and my friends from New Jersey who are just...
Yeah, not heavy gamers.
Thick. They're just not smart people. Well, they're really... I'm saying this because one of our New Jersey crew, Andrew, friend of the pod, was going to come on with us, and then at the last minute he was unable to join us on the podcast. Sorry, Andrew, we love you.
So now you're burning him to the ground.
A little bit.
It's a teach, but it's also one of those things where I could see non-gamers totally being fine with it, in the sense that it is a sandbox. You don't have to teach everything, and it is one of those things where it goes, tell me what you want to do, I'll tell you how to do it. And they go, okay, well, I want to get that helmet over there, and then I want to bash the scientist in the face with this bludgeon. Okay, let me tell you how to do that.
Right.
So it's literally figure out what you want to do. And what's nice is it is a big sandbox. There are a lot of rules, but they're focused really well, because all you care about is getting the like 6 or 7 points on your card. It's a low scoring game. And there's only a handful of ways to get points in the game. So it's like I kept saying to Jake, just look at your card. There's nothing you need to do in this game other than look at your card and get those points. But do it in a way where it's really hard for people to figure out who you are until as late as possible.
And how did Jake do on those two goals?
You know, it was hard in the first game. But I feel like that really does simplify things.
Let's talk scoring, because this is one of those low scoring affairs.
You can win the game with 0 points.
That I love.
Yeah.
The scores in our 5-player game were 0, 0, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
That was it.
6-1.
6 points won the game, which is just delightful.
It's great.
Just absolutely delightful.
Your average agenda scores somewhere between 5 and 9 points.
I could have won the game if my last two rounds I was simply pulling back one of my influence cubes.
Right. Yeah.
Would have won 100%. It in retrospect.
You lost it on cubes.
Instead, yeah. I was trying to mess with people and make sure that like I was stopping Jake from getting off. Like right. And that gave him 0 points, but right. he wouldn't have gotten that many points if he had gotten off. I could have let him. So Jake played the billionaire, and the billionaire's job was to find his dog.
Who's hidden somewhere. Not hidden, but far away from him at the beginning of the game on the thing. Yeah.
Get his little doggy and get off the station, essentially. And he's got three special bribery tokens, which allows him to bribe other characters to do his bidding. I think that was mainly what that character was.
Yeah, he's got to get off. He's got to be with his dog, but he needs to be in a pod by himself with his dog. Yeah. He has to escape alone. He doesn't allow any of these peasants into his pod.
Oh, I didn't even know that because I kept putting the astro chimp in the pod with him.
Yes.
But to damage the pod.
Right. No.
All you needed to do is
just put the chimp in there, and the billionaire barely gets any points because billionaire is not going to be in a pod with these peasants.
Flying back down with astro chimp?
Are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
Embarrassing.
Oh, Elon doesn't do that.
No.
Okay, that's not the way it works. So that was his character. Your character was the exile.
I was the exile. I was basically the spy who just wants to get dirt on all these people. And then I want them to get back to Earth safely. So then I have dirt on them back in Earth where I can really use it to do some dastardly things.
As I mentioned, I was the security bot. My job was to make sure the bad guys are all down by the end of the game, and to make sure
you were
sure.
true good, but in a strange way. Yeah.
Andrew was the station chief. His job was to make sure that people got off and go down with the ship, and he did that. And Jim's character was
who was Jim? He wasn't the boarder.
Oh, he was the counselor.
He was the counselor, right? What did the counselor need to do? I'm forgetting right now.
The counselor, I think they have the ability to kind of whisper in people's ear and get them to do things. They're kind of a dark character in some ways.
Yeah, they have all the dirt on everybody, and they can mess up your cube situation.
His job was to survive as one thing.
Counselor wants to get to Earth with the artifact and have the most compromat.
Yes.
And the least cubes in the betrayal box.
Unfortunately, he was playing. There were two compromat heavy characters, yours and his.
Yeah, and we were both. And Jake just decided that compromat's good, and so he started taking all the compromat.
Well, he saw really, you two doing it, and he was like, "Oh, I guess that's what I got
to
do."
And then that really wasn't helpful to me.
No. And then, of course, Jim also had the character that needed to get the shard, and my character's job was to make sure the shard doesn't make
that
it to Earth.
Gets
so,
the shard, yeah.
So he kind of so him getting 4 points is kind of astonishing because he walked into two different buzzsaws.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. What's really fun about this game to me is just like I usually bounce off these types of games pretty hard. I'm gonna go ahead and say this is my favorite of this genre of Chaos Bombs, purely because I think I always feel like the game itself isn't worthy of the story it tells. It's not as interesting as the story it tells. And I genuinely feel like I'm as excited to play the game. To be handed my two cards at the beginning and to start figuring out how I'm going to achieve those goals is such a fun puzzle to me that the story it tells, which is incredible, is as good as the game I'm playing.
Yeah, I think that with a hidden role game, there's always a couple questions that go into it. First of all is hiding who you are is interesting to a point, but is it fun? It's not always the funnest thing in the world. The second part of that is once you're revealed, does the fun leave the game? Is it gone? And I would say in this case, this is a hidden role game in which the hidden roles are, I think, for early players, they kind of hold on to the hidden roles too long. And the reality is find your moment to declare who you are, make yourself as bulletproof as you can, and use your advantage then to get to the end. It really is a puzzle game more than anything else.
Yeah.
It is a puzzle game of figuring out how to use these 14 different people that are in these different places to literally do things like, I sent somebody out an airlock to get into the airlock all the way down to the bottom of the ship by the bridge so that they could release the chaos monster in Project X, because that would kill a lot of people. That would down a lot of people. And my security bot wants a lot of people down.
Yeah.
That's like the best thing. So that was my whole strategy. I didn't even activate my main character until the last quarter of the game.
Right. That's the cool thing. It's like, you really have to explain to people playing it, like, you are not your character until you reveal. You are just whispering in other people's ears.
Yeah.
And convincing them, having influence over them to do the things you want to do to achieve your goals, until finally at some point you go, by the way, here I am.
We basically forgot about one of the characters. There's a castaway who starts off not off on the board.
Yeah, because they're hiding somewhere.
Just sitting there. We had at one point 10 of 14 characters basically dead. 10 of 14 characters were in the beast of the belly of this beast, and we were trying to figure out how to stop this from being just a total party kill situation, and we forgot that character was still out there.
Stowaway could appear in any dark room on the station.
And by the way, if somebody had that as their secret character, they would have won the game.
Totally, because they could have just appeared in the dark pod and
at the last second
and blasted off. Yeah.
Oh, it would have been amazing.
Except the stowaway, unfortunately, is actually a journalist who needs to move around and get evidence and get information on Project X and then beam it back to the news sources on Earth before escaping. So they can't just escape because they have to.
Do they get any points for just escaping? Because 1 point would win that game.
Potentially, it could have. Yeah, absolutely. Give me your overall. You played this once. I've played it twice.
So so super early days here.
This is not a review. These are early impressions, but I am excited enough that I really wanted us to talk about it.
Okay. So for me, this is an interesting space in my experience. So I love games like Avalon. This has a little bit of that. It's just a little touch of it, which I like very much. I love a good puzzle game where you're trying to figure out how to make this thing happen using all these different resources.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of that.
Yeah,
I like games like Captain Sonar, which are just experiences, right? Fun, exciting experiences. This has got that in spades.
Yeah.
What do I worry about? I do worry that on repeated plays, it could go one of two ways. It could go that, it's just getting deeper and deeper because I'm seeing connections that I didn't see before, and I'm putting together these great moves. Or it could be on repeated plays that, at the end of the day, far too many times when I play this game, the chaos overwhelms the planning, and it ends up overstaying. It ends up being too long for a game that doesn't allow good strategy and good planning. And as fun as it is, and it is, the presentation of the game could not be more fun forward and really interesting. It could end up being a disappointment on that regard.
That is the one thing. If it starts feeling like, no, I really don't have enough agency as I want. Because the agency is really going to be about it's going to be different for everybody, how much agency they feel they need to have in order for this to be a good experience.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a chance this game could end up being like, it's 10% too crazy. And at a certain point in every game, I just sort of go, well, now I have no chance. And that has nothing to do with anything I did. But okay, now we have still an hour left.
Yeah, so that's the question for me right now.
Of the two games I've played,
fantastic.
Of the two games I played, and it's only two games.
Yep,
I didn't even come close to feeling that way. In fact, I felt like in both cases, 100% my fault. And in fact, it instantly left and go, I want to play again because now I'm getting better. Now I know how to do this.
For my first play, I released the Chaos Bomb on turn 10, 11?
You may get a little 12? Information in your next game before you do that.
What?
You may try to get a little info before you do that in the next game.
I stand by it. I think it was solid strategy for my character.
And it was great for exploring the space, yes.
Yeah, but it is one of those things that, you know, maybe with the next play, like, what if Project X doesn't even happen?
Yeah.
It's a very different game.
Totally, 100%.
It's a very different game.
And to me, I'm excited about this game with a group of players that have played it a lot. To me, this is the type of game, and I genuinely feel like, while this takes up a completely different space in our nights and our amount of time it takes, as Avalon. This, I could imagine this being a game that if we stuck with it in 5 years, the stories that we could start churning out of it, when everybody knows every character in the game, and we know all the interactions, and then that flop comes and those 14 cards go down at the beginning, and everybody's just like, you know, rubbing their hands together and like, let's go, this is going to be great. I just feel like that it could be so fun and fast. I feel like that could be hour 90 minutes at those point, those games, when everybody knows what they're doing.
That's the worry there too, which is that I hope that it can. I hope we can get it down to about 90 minutes, because I don't know if I want Station Fall to be the main course.
Mm, yeah.
Right? It was the main course yesterday. I had a great time with that. I don't know if Play 20, I want it to be the main course. I think Play 20, I wish it was more like an Avalon thing where it is the first game or last game of the night, but there's room for maybe not a huge long game, but there's room for another game.
Yeah. I think it's maybe more the type of game you're able to play twice in a night as opposed to the whole meal.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm just saying that other games like I think Bloody Inn and things like that.
This is not a filler. This is a game night. You're either playing it twice or you're playing it once.
If we can get it down to 90 minutes with experienced players,
sure.
To me, that's a sweet spot for this. Yeah. That would be amazing. I don't know if it can do that consistently. Don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But yeah, I don't know. I'm taken with it. This feels like that type of game that I've been looking for. And I really like heavy games. I like games with a lot of rules. I like games that feel like they're extremely complicated puzzles to solve. And this really scratches the itch for me while also doing more. Like I like it. Like I enjoy WizWar. WizWar is really fun, but WizWar as a game feels lacking to me.
Which WizWar have you played?
I've played the one you have, and I've played the Fantasy Flight one.
Oh, okay, so you have played the one I've
played. Yeah, once. We played it once, yeah.
Good. Because that's real WizWar to me. That's,
yeah. I've been waiting for somebody to make what feels like a really great heavy game out of that experience, and I had never experienced that before. And that to me feels like, I didn't even back this. I heard like Hidden Roles, and I was just like, I'm not interested in those type of games anymore. I hadn't found anything great. And a friend of mine told me that he backed it and he moved recently, didn't have his game group anymore. And he was like, do you want to take it off my hands? I was like, you know what? I've read enough good reviews about it. It seems interesting. I'd take it off your hands. I can sell it if I don't like it. I played this once and I just know this is a game never leaving my collection. This just scratches an itch that I've been looking for a long time.
So having hundreds and hundreds of games in my collection now, to some extent, one of the criteria is, where does this fit into the collection? And right. I'm always looking for a game that I don't have a game like this.
Yeah.
And I don't have a game like Station 5.
I don't think anything ever existed like this before.
No, it's kind of a party game for heavy gamers.
That's exactly right.
Right? Which it's I think exactly somebody right. said in a review. That's not original to me. But I do think that's a really cool space.
Yeah. That doesn't exist until now. I didn't even know that was an option.
Production values, largely great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks good. It looks interesting. The design of the space station looks 3D. The connection between everything. The box art is probably among my favorite of the year. I think it's gorgeous. It's basically Space Chimp escaping from
the only one to survive.
Escaping from
Does he have any of his goodies?
Fall.
I don't know. He doesn't have the... he failed. He doesn't have the briefcase. He doesn't have the gun. That's why he looks so upset.
He might have won.
He might have won.
But he gets 2 points for getting to Earth.
It. He won with 2 points.
All right. He might have won the game.
Poor guy.
It is pretty great. The chaos of 14 different characters in 14 different places is a little much. There's a miniature version we should talk about for a quick second. There's a miniature version.
So my friend who bought this, who I purchased it off of, went all in. So he had the neoprene mat. He had the minis. I don't think you need the minis. You definitely don't need the neoprene mat.
The minis do something.
They do.
Which, look, if I start pimping minis,
I know.
You know there's something wrong going on. But I really do think that the other alternative are these little
wooden
columns, essentially.
With basically just the character's logo on it.
And I will say that having the minis, there was
we used both. So we used the mini and put right next to it, we put the little character's symbol.
And there's a reason for that. The reason is that when you're trying to track 14 characters, it's easier to track by symbol.
Right.
So,
but what, at a certain what, point, your eye starts knowing what to look for in the shapes of the minis.
Kind of, but I don't think the sculpts are quite different enough
right.
that you can get that quick visual.
Right.
Right.
You're, well, for you're, things like Security Bot or the Chimp or some of them, sure. it quickly you don't even need anything
immediately. Yeah. But all the humanoids are blend together to yeah. some greater or less.
I wish the miniature just had the logo printed in color on the base.
Yes, agreed.
That would solve my whole.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. I think that would be something that would deal with it. I would say though that I think the game plays better. Maybe because it is kind of a party game, I think it actually does play better with the minis, and I would recommend getting the minis for this game, which is I don't know what's going on with me.
Yeah, Matt.
It violates everything I believe in.
I know,
so, and yet I think it does.
This game is available on Ion's website, Ion Game Design. You can buy it straight from them. I don't know.
$85.
Yeah, it's $85 just for the base game. I believe they're still selling the miniatures. You're gonna have to check. Your mileage may vary on if they're available.
It's on pre-order at all your online game stores.
Yeah, I think it'll be coming retail eventually. Yeah, I mean, look, you know if this is for you from hearing about it. I think it's at least worth checking out. If you are a heavy gamer, this to me feels like something that every heavy gamer should at least check out because it's a really cool design.
I agree. Yeah, it occupies, like I said, it occupies a very different space than anything else in my game collection. And
are you going to be picking it up?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, listen, it's just the first play, so I don't know. I gave caveats. There are caveats.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But so far, so great.
Yeah.
So great. I had such fun playing. Like, I don't get to play with you that often.
Yeah.
Like, even when we're at the same game night, which is almost all the week, I have to teach one and you have to teach one.
Right.
So that's, thankfully we're starting to, with Ben and Jordan and people, we have more people that are bringing games and teaching games, and that's great. So we get to play more, but I very much enjoy playing with you, and that was a lot of fun last night.
Yeah. Stationfall.
Stationfall.
Stationfall. Can we talk about one last thing before we take off?
Of course we can.
I haven't played this yet.
Well, I actually have one thing to talk about, too.
Please. I'm very excited to try this out. I just want to talk.
Robotech Reconstruction.
I just want to talk about it. So, Robotech Reconstruction is a coin game. 100% a coin game.
Really?
It is designed by Dr. Wichts. And it is, when I say it's 100% a coin game, I mean it is all the rules of a coin game.
Oh, so two different sides, four factions.
Yep. Then they break it down in a way that I wish coin games would. You have your enemy, you have your half friend, and you have your half enemy.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what coin. Well, yeah.
But
coin game varies.
It is exactly the game. I mean, it's just if you know how to play coin, you know how to play this. But it simplifies it in a real. It is the simplest coin entry way.
Four player only.
Three players plus a bot if you want. Yes, but yeah, four player only. It is the simplest. This is the go to entry point for coin now. I have learned it. I have not played it yet.
So it used to be Cuba Libre.
Yeah,
and now it's this.
Yeah. This is so simple and so fun and so well. I'm like, I just love that somebody made a new coin game. Just literally just took coin because, you can and set it in Robotech. I don't care about Robotech. I've never watched it. I don't know about it, but I do like giant robots. And when you learn the four factions, they're all really fun and have different really fun things they're doing. It's just straight up a coin game. And I just love that somebody's making a coin game other than GMT. They obviously aren't allowed to call it coin, but it is straight up coin.
And is doing it for Robotech, right? It's getting out of the military historic.
Exactly. And it is cheap. It's $40, which is a lot cheaper than, I'm trying to find the website so I can tell you really quickly. StrangeMachineGames.com. Look, I haven't played this yet. I just bought it and read the rules and set it up on the table and sort of worked through a round. I was just amazed.
I'm going to try before I buy, but I'm very interested.
Yeah. It's only available from Strange Machine Games. It's a tiny little box. You could almost take it with you to a bar and it's a full coin game.
When you said $40, I was looking at that box. I'm like, oh no. That's too much for that size box.
Yeah. Well,
you gotta put a big insert inside it and put it in a bigger box.
Yeah, probably. But Dan Thoreau, Space Biff, gave it an incredible review, which is what put it on my radar. Sorry, it's $45. Oh boy, Tom's out. I put on our Instagram. They had me at Robotech Coin. Like, just the idea of somebody taking, you know, non-historical themes and putting these heavy war game, you know, mechanics into them is really fun. And I'm excited to get to the table and try it. But yeah, it's just, I mean, I kept being like, it's not really going to be a coin. It's going to be more like Root or something. No, it's literally every rule from Coin.
Like, that's amazing.
It's just every rule from, it works exactly the same. The card play, everything, the move, the flip, the, like all the basic moves from a coin game are totally here. Yeah.
Okay, I will say one thing then. I will say that I know you can't copyright game mechanics.
Right.
It gives me a tiny bit of pause when you take the exact same game mechanics that other people have designed and then.
But do you feel that way about 18XX? Do you feel they all owed Francis Tresham some money? Because there's about 20 different companies making 18XX games.
Like maybe a little bit. I will say the difference here is that this one says Robotech. That's a little like, okay, so big manga just grabbed it up and decided to do their thing. So you know,
they have to pay for the license.
If it's a licensed thing, that's less cool to me. But yeah, I'm down to play it. So I'll get over that in a heartbeat.
I just wanted to talk about it on the pod because it was just seems like something our audience would be interested in checking out.
And I'm going to bring up a game that Andrew, who we played last night, Andrew from New Jersey, went to high school with him, brought out this game. Evidently, he's close neighbors with one of the people that runs PAX Unplugged. And didn't even know it. And then suddenly they found out they had board games in common. And he's the one that goes to Essen every year and grabs the games for PAX Unplugged and brought out this little Taiwanese game by Zhanghua Yang called Vegetable Stock from 2019. It is a little, one of those little Japanese/Taiwanese card games. Plays in about 15 minutes.
Oh.
And looks like a really fun filler. The idea is that you are trying to stock vegetables in your little stand. You're going to be drawing a series of cards, and it's a little bit of press your luck in the sense that you get if you're looking to get Japanese sweet potatoes or something along those lines, you're looking for cards with Japanese sweet potatoes. But if you get too much, like if it gets up to 5 coins for Japanese sweet potatoes and then somebody gives you one more, it goes back down to 0 because you flooded the market again. So it looks like it's got a touch of Bonanza to it.
Yeah, I was exactly going to say it has Bonanza vibes.
But yeah, but plays in 15 minutes and is a little more slap that, take that, have some fun.
Right.
It looked really, I haven't played it, but getting the description, looking at the cards, looking at the rules, it looks really fun.
Yeah, that looks
cool. Surprisingly cool game. So if you're looking for a tiny little filler, see if you can't find a way to get your hands on Vegetable Stock.
Pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Anything else? Reiner Knizia has a new game on that's being kickstarted. It's not on Kickstarter, though, technically. I believe it is on GameFound. It's called Hwang, and it is a new implementation of Tigris and Euphrates.
Another new implementation of Tigers and Phrases.
It re-implements Tigers and Phrases in Yellow and Yangtze, so it is, yes, exactly like his, I guess, his third in this. It's called Hwang, H-U-A-N-G. I'm always interested in anything Reiner Knizia does. I was so impressed with Babylonia that it's like, well, now it's like, well, I want to see anything he's doing recently because he seems like he's on fire right now.
Maybe, yeah, might be back again. And Tigers and Phrases is such a great classic design that I want him to keep iterating on that until he finds something that exactly. Really hits.
So I backed this one. It looks really cool. It's, you know, it's a beautiful copy. But yeah, it's called Hwang. It's on GameFound. That was the only really interesting thing I've backed recently. Mm. Well, Tom, 90 minutes.
That's it.
That feels like the sweet spot to me.
Boom. Super short and sharp. I don't know why these people just keep talking all the time.
Talky, talky, talky.
They just want to hear themselves. We're here about delivering the information that our listeners need.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have 15 minutes till the station explodes.
No personality. No fluffing each other.
I didn't ask you one question about your boring life. I don't care.
That's
right. I don't want to know anything about it.
Didn't say anything about that. You've taken the title Game Master away from me, evidently. Yep. I'm not sure what it's going to be replaced
by. I'm just trying to protect you from cancellation.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Like,
I didn't ask you anything you ate this week. I didn't ask
If it, if game mastering food is my kink, there's no shame in that.
Thank you, Game Master. Thank you, Game Master. master.
Do you have the sign off up, or do you want me to do it?
You can handle this.
You want me to do it?
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Trey Alsop, and Ben Mandelker. Special thanks to Daedalus for our incredible music. More on Daedalus at GameBrainPod.com. Thanks to Edamar Peleg for our incredible graphics. You know where to find him, Kerbaloni. You can also reach us by email at contact@GameBrainPod.com or on Twitter at GameBrain_pod. Thanks so much for listening, and go play some games with friends or make some friends with games.
Goodbye.